is ready to hear argument from petitioners in the matter of J.P.
May it please the court, Robert J. Kersey, and excuse me, legal to present arguments for petitioners. Petitioners reserve 3 minutes for rebuttal. Kersey will open the first 12 minutes. Mr. Kersey will also present the rebuttal.
May it please the court, opposing counsel.
Marshall, would you close the door, back door?
Your Honors, this is a statutory construction case involving two sections of the juvenile code. Section 5404 is entitled Disposition Hearings. The next section is entitled Hearings on Modification. This is, the facts of the case are very brief. We have a juvenile who was put on probation for a couple of acts of delinquent misconduct that met the technical requirements of felony level offenses.
But let me ask you this. If we were to find, as you argue, that the trial court is required to make these findings, the 5404 findings, and that the trial court erred in failing to do so, would we engage in a harmless error analysis and determine from the record that those findings were, I mean, that there would be implied findings in favor of the judgment and they're supported by the record? I mean, what if we agree with you legally? What's the result?
I think we would have to remand to the Fort Worth Court of Appeals, where they would have to review the record once again to look at harmless error, but I think it would be inevitable they would have to find harmless error because these determinations that are set out in 5404I are very specific. And I can tell you now, the record doesn't contain those determinations. And
that's which one was not in the order?
Your Honor, A, that the decision that the commitment was in the best interest of the child was not in the order. And I believe C, also, that the child could not be provided the quality of care and legal support needed.
Maybe I'm looking at the wrong order. But on, this is the one signed April 22nd, 2002.
That is the trial court order, Your Honor.
It says the court finds that the best interest of the juvenile community to be served by committing him to TYC. And then it also X'd off that local resources of the court are inadequate to properly rehabilitate the juvenile. That's exactly what you're arguing should be in the order, right?
I'm sorry, Your Honor, my memory is bad on this.
Well, assume with me that I'm not lying. I'm reading this to you out of the order. That's exactly what you're arguing should be in order, right?
Yes, Your Honor. That was dealing with the specifics, and I dealt with that in the Court of Appeals a year or so ago.
Sure. Assume with me that's in the order, then this order complies with either one, right?
It would be in partial compliance in that point, Your Honor, but the order, I don't have a copy of that order in front of me, Your Honor, but it does not contain all three of those determinations, does it?
Well, again, which one does it not contain? You said best interest and inadequate resources.
I believe it contains a statement that local resources have been exhausted, but that's really a reason for the judge's decision. It's not one of the criteria under 5404.
Okay.
I believe I complained about the absence of two of these determinations in the court's order, and I don't have a copy of that in front of me. But there are three determinations under 5404I that are required for a commitment to TYC.
All three of them focus on whether the child should be left at home, and that makes sense in a 5404 hearing. Because he hadn't been removed yet, except perhaps temporarily. But what sense does that make in a 5405 hearing when he's already been taken from the home?
Your Honor, these are criteria, not just for whether he's out of the house. These are criteria that 5404 says. These are criteria you have to meet if you're going to use the option of last resort, That is the Texas Youth Commission.
Right.
We don't want you to send kids to TYC unless things are so bad that you can basically make what amount to these findings.
Well, but the findings you say should take findings that basically it's okay to take them out of. I mean, there's variations on that thing.
Well, Your Honor.
But he's all, but in a, isn't it true that in a 5405 hearing, he's already gone?
He may or may not be out of the house, Your Honor. He may be on probation in the parent's home at the commencement of a 5405 hearing.
So there would be some circumstances. That could be either way, I guess.
Yes, Your Honor. In addition to that, the 5404I criteria, our main concern is to look at those with a view toward committing children to TYC. That these should be, this should be a threshold under any circumstances that must be delineated and crossed consciously by a court before they send a child to TYC. And our argument is that there was no need for the legislature to say this twice. We all know that a modification is simply, from a logical and practical point of view, just a redisposition. It's just a disposition after the first disposition.
The legislature has met, though, twice since Justice Richter's concurrence and once since Justice McClure's opinion, and has had a dozen or maybe two dozen bills modifying these sections of the Family Code, and none of them deal with this. Do what you did with Judge Brister and assume that that's correct.
Sure.
Do you have any explanation about why that's not a legislative endorsement of?
Your Honor, they may not at this point see it as a pressing problem, and the truth is most of our courts, most of our judges in Texas are lawyers. And if you let a lawyer read through 5405, 5404, and 5405, most of them are going to look at those standards. If they think they've got to send a child to TYC, for the sake of their own conscience, they're going to look at those 5404I criteria before they send a child to TYC. And I would bet you a lot of them are putting these determinations in those orders because they think that's the right thing to do. And a lot of them are refraining from sending children to TYC because of this criteria. They feel an ethical duty to use this.
Are there any of these criteria that the judge did not discuss in the course of his soliloquy prior to announcing his determination?
In the course of this particular case, Your Honor?
Yes. I mean, we have a record, and it's preserved, that where the judge gives his rationale at some length for why he's making this determination.
Your Honor, I must confess, I did not get a chance to go back over the trial record or the language of the judge.
The state put it in brief.
I'm sorry?
The state appended it.
I objected to the missing criteria in my brief to the Court of Appeals, and that's where this all started. Because he didn't put those in. He didn't put those in his written order. He was missing some of these.
If the judge announced them, if he read them word for word from the bench, and a record was made of that, but he didn't put it in the order, is that fatal?
Your Honor, I think upon a remand to the Court of Appeals, that could very easily end up with harmless error decision. Yes, Your Honor.
Why would we not determine harmless error? Because the factual situation.
That is possible in an individual case, Your Honor. Of course, today the issue that I've been instructed to frame is, am I interpreting the statute correctly? There's nothing to prevent this court from rendering a construction of the statute. I really think that's the Court of Appeals' job. You folks have other things to do. That's really their job to do factual reviews. Yeah. I do want to point out to the court the reason why we think these criteria apply to both sections, and it begins with the introduction to the Title III. It shows a list of purposes, and then number five says this title shall be construed to achieve the foregoing purposes in a family environment, separating the child from the parents only when necessary for the child's welfare or in the interest of the public. We go further to the government code, 311.026, says that we're supposed to construe statutes in such a manner as to give effect to the entire statute. And the implication of that being that if we have sections that appear to have some inconsistency, if we can reconcile them so as to give effect to both of them, we're supposed to do it. In other words, Your Honors, it wasn't necessary for the legislature to put these criteria in both 5404 and 5405. 5405 is almost, from a logical point of view, it is a subsection of 5404. First, you start in 04 with disposition matters. Then you go to 5405, which should be interpreted to say, and when you have to go back and look at this again, here are the additional rules you use. You do not abandon 5404 entirely just because you're in a modification context. We've got criteria. Let's continue them over into the modification process. Further, Government Code 311.023 allows this court to look at the consequences of these, of the construction of statutes. At this point, the construction of these statutes by most of the Court of Appeals results in pretty much meaningless review. In my brief, I cited a review by one of the Courts of Appeals of a case like this, and I believe it was two sentences. This is an abuse of discretion case. We looked at the record. We don't think the judge abused his discretion. End of discussion.
So there's no
standards for us here.
Well, if we have a child, this only applies to felons and people who commit jailable misdemeanors, right?
But, Your Honor, a child can be vulnerable to its TYC commitment if he commits multiple felonies or multiple misdemeanors or one felony.
Okay. So we found, let's say it's a felony. We found this delinquent juvenile committed a felony. We give him or her a chance and say, here's the conditions. Now, if you don't follow these, you must follow these conditions. If you do not, then I'm going to send you where I could send you today. No question that if you commit the felony, the trial judge, as an initial matter, could have sent him to TYC, right?
Yes, sir.
So they don't follow the conditions. Why is it an abuse of discretion, whatever the condition is? Give me an example of where it would be an abuse of discretion.
Your Honor, where a child was on a probation, as you described, for, say, take this case, felony. He kicked his school teacher. 4 foot, 70-pound boy kicks his school teacher. He's committed a felony. He's on probation. He breaks a curfew. He gets caught smoking cigarettes. Something like this. And so the judge ends up sending him to Texas Youth Commission. As the judge from the San Antonio Court of Appeals decision said, a young violator can be sent to TYC on a minor probation violation. And these are not the kind of kids we want to put in TYC.
But the abuse there would be setting a condition of probation that was minor, would it not?
I'm sorry. Setting a condition?
In other words, your argument, well, this is terrible, he can be sent away for doing for breaking a minor probation condition.
Yes, sir.
Under that theory, it's a abuse of discretion to have any minor conditions on probation.
No, Your Honor, I think it would be an abuse of discretion to... I don't think it would be in a child's best interest to go to TYC because he was smoking cigarettes or he broke a curfew. There's another section of the Family Code, Your Honor. Under 5404, the disposition section deals with violent and habitual offenders and refers us back to 53.05, where we deal with kids that are charged and adjudicated of things like murder, capital murder, manslaughter, aggravated kidnapping, aggravated assault, aggravated robbery, serious offenses. These people who have previously, very often previously, been sentenced under another section, they may, these are the dangerous kids. Now, they've already been in court before, and they couldn't be sent to TYC on a minor violation, but this is not the case, and that's not the kind of facts we have here.
Any other questions?
If we didn't think the conditions, if we decide to construe the statute and decide the conditions don't have to be stated again in the modification hearing, if that's the decision of the court, then it becomes truly a legislative process, right? The legislature can come back and determine whether or not the trial court needs to make additional findings. Why shouldn't we, if it's slightly ambiguous, put it up to the legislature to clarify if it wants to?
One practical reason is the legislature is, and they laughed at me in the other court when I made this expression, we have a part-time legislature. Those people deal with thousands and thousands of bills. They're lucky to get as much done as they can. If we can make a clarification that we believe is consistent with their intent, that's a good thing. I've ran out of time, Your Honor.
Any other questions? Thank you, counsel. We'll allow, how much time would you?
Fine.
Desperate. All right, we'll allow an extra 5 minutes.
May it please the court. The Court of Appeals and trial court decision in this case should be reversed for two reasons. First, the trial court failed to comply with Section 54.05I of the Family Code, and second, because the trial court abused its discretion. In this case, the trial court failed to comply with 54.05I, which requires that the court in its order state its specific reasons for the modification of disposition.
It stated them.
Excuse me?
It stated them, didn't it?
No, all the court said was that the child violated, the court did not state the findings required by 54.04I.
Stated
2 out of 3. Did not state subsection C. That the child in the child's home could not be provided with the resources necessary.
But you'd agree that the evidence at the hearing supported an implied finding to that effect.
I would agree that the facts in the order in the trial court record did support that, but 54.05I requires that those three particular findings be stated in the order. Particularly leaving out subsection C, the court did not comply with 54.05I.
But again, my question is, if we find the trial court erred, as you claim, by failing to state it in the order, why don't we apply our jurisprudence that says you imply all findings in support of the judgment and determine that this was harmless error?
Because that does not support the rationale of Title III of the Family Code, which is preservation of the family environment. In this case, those three findings are required to be there for the protection of the child. Commitment of the child to TYC should be a last resort.
I thought it was required to be there because of federal law.
That is also true. It's the rationale behind.
And does the federal law require it to be there in modification orders? Apparently not.
It requires it to be there when the child is removed from the home. And that is true whether the child is removed at the original disposition hearing or whether the child is removed at the modification of disposition hearing. The rationale for the 54.05.
So your understanding is if an order doesn't have these findings in it, a modification order, even if it complies with the state statute, you can't get any federal funding for it?
That's correct.
What case or authority do you have to back?
I was unable to find any case support in supporting 42 U.S.C. Section 75A15, which requires
this. Give me that one more time.
42 U.S.C. Section 675, subsection A, subsection 15.
Stop.
42.
Take your time.
42.
Say each number once.
42 U.S.C. 675A, sub 15.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
In the trial court, the judge entered this order, I'm seeing, April 22nd?
Yes.
Okay. After that order was entered, was there any motion to modify to point out to the judge's error in not making this required finding?
I don't believe so.
What's your best argument in the minute or two that's left for how you can
read a part of 5404 and 5405.
5405I corresponds to 5404F.
Right.
And they both require that the court state in its order the specific reasons for its findings. If you read 5405F, like some court of appeals have, to require that all is required in the court's order is that the child violated a reasonable and lawful order of the court, then you've now rendered 5405I meaningless.
Well, but 5405I, as Justice McClure pointed out, could mean that the trial judge has to say something about his reasons for doing it without incorporating the three particular factors in 5404.
Not in this case, Your Honor, because we're talking about commitment of a child to TYC. In either case, whether it's an original disposition or a modification of disposition, it's sending the child away from the home. And commitment to TYC should be a last resort. Therefore, in order to comply with 5405I, specific statement of the reasons in this order, the statement in 5404I requirement should be also stated.
I mean, in a certain respect, limiting it to the factors in 5404I is not reading 5405I as broadly as the court might do.
Well, it's not limited to just those three findings. It's including but not limited to those findings. Those findings must be there, and the court can make additional findings in support of the record that justifies the modification of the disposition or commitment. Thank you very much.
Thank you, counsel. The court is ready to hear argument and respond.
May it please the court, Mr. Chad Bull is in argument for the respondent.
Good morning, and may it please the court. What we have here this morning, I believe, is correct to a certain degree when we're basically dealing with a statutory interpretation of two statutes in the Texas Family Code between 54.04 and 54.05. Our contention, obviously, is that 5405 and dealing with the modification hearings is clearly self-sufficient and black and white when it comes to what is required in those orders and what is required of the court and to make in making those determinations as to whether or not not just modifying the juvenile's disposition, but also if that modification were to, in fact, send him to the Texas Youth Commission.
Do you agree that the federal statute requires these three findings to be in a modification order, or you lose federal funding?
No, I don't agree, because I haven't seen anything that specifically spells that out, Your Honor. And that's why I won't agree to that. I have seen nothing in the Texas case laws that even cites that.
I suppose if the federal authorities were refusing to send money to the TYC under modification circumstances, TYC would speak up.
Especially nowadays, with funding being so hard to get, I would definitely see that they would speak up because they wouldn't want to risk that. They need their money.
But you don't have any cases saying
no,
one way or the other.
No, Your Honor. Well, the Texas cases that are cited in our brief and the brief of appellants and the amicus curiae brief, including the case out of El Paso, make no specific reference as to the federal law requiring that those three conditions be included in an order modifying disposition.
The concern of the El Paso court and Justice Rickoff seems to be that under 5405F, all trial court has to do is find that the child violated a reasonable, lawful order of the court, quote unquote, and the court can send the child to TYC. And maybe that's not enough. And Justice McClure specifically pointed to subdivision I and said that's got to mean something for the court to make findings, and maybe if the findings weren't good enough, the simple violation of an order under F wouldn't be enough to justify sending a child to TYC. What's your view of that?
Well, I assume you're talking about how they're making the statement that it would render 5405 meaningless, basically stating the reasons as to why the modification.
Well, the question is, should a reviewing court look at those findings and say, well, even though you're there under F, these findings are not good enough?
Well, yes. I mean, that's why I don't think that their claim that they claim that the statute, certain parts of the statute are rendered meaningless and therefore in contradiction to the section that they cited in the government code, section 311, point 021, when it comes to the intention enactment of, in the enactment of statutes, that the entire statute is intended to be effective. You have, and they in fact specifically cite in their brief, in appellant's brief, or I should say the amicus curiae brief, and we in fact cite him in our brief also, Robert Dawson in his book on Texas juvenile law, he's quoting citing a case, KWH versus State. There he basically states that under 54.05i, reasons for the modification, that contemplates more than merely just stating in the order that the juvenile was found to have violated a reasonable and valid order of the court, a reasonable and lawful order of the court, or using other general terms. That they require that the modifying order must specifically recite the conduct of the offense which prompted the court to make the modification. And so right there, I think you're showing that in the statute, you must show that, first of all, that they have violated a reasonable and lawful order of the court.
So let me ask you, and this was Justice Rickoff's concern.
Yes.
You've got an order. The child's on probation. Part of the probation is he has to obey the school dress code. School dress code says no black shoelaces. That was Justice Rickoff's example. He wears black shoelaces. The trial judge says, I find you violated a reasonable and lawful order of the court. Probation said, obey the school dress code. He didn't, no question about it. So he makes a finding and says, this, off to TYC. Should that order be affirmed?
Well, I think the question would be, is that considered a reasonable and lawful order of the court? Obviously requiring that a juvenile on probation abide by the rules of school or whatever, I mean, that would be considered a reasonable and lawful order, but I mean, that would definitely be a subject that the Court of Appeals would have the right, or a juvenile would have the right to have them look at on a case-by-case basis.
Let's take an example that is clearly not a reasonable, where the order is clearly reasonable and lawful. Instead of wearing black shoelaces to school, let's say the probation order said no littering, and the findings under 5404 were made with the probation order. Let's say the youth then throws his bubblegum wrapper paper on the sidewalk. He littered, or she littered, without any other findings as to best interests of the child, and simply a determination that the probation order was violated. Is it appropriate to commit the youth for the first time without going back through the 5404 findings? That's the concern the El Paso Court of Appeals raises.
Well, and I can understand, as Judge Rickoff also stated in the San Antonio case, the concerns that juveniles, or the claim that juveniles could be sent to TYC for minor probation violations. And
well, the trial judge doesn't have to send them if they violate.
No, and precisely.
So the trial judge has discretion, and the Court of Appeals could review that discretion to see if it was an abuse to send them to TYC for littering, right?
Clearly, and that's the standard that we're dealing with, is yes, it is an abuse of discretion standard, but that would go to the review of what you're talking about. Did the trial court basically abuse its discretion?
Let's put the discretion to the side.
Okay.
The question is, should the trial court be able to send that youth to incarceration, or type of incarceration, for throwing the bubblegum wrapper on the sidewalk without the findings on best interests, whether the home can provide the regulation and supervision and rehabilitation. Those other findings under 54.04 put discretion to the side. The question we're presented with is, should the trial court be able to do that?
Well, the legislature says yes. I mean, that's what the legislature has said. I mean, based on the reading of the statute.
Based on your interpretation of the statute.
Yes.
You know, we have a contrary interpretation before us.
That in 5404, I understand that.
Let me ask it a different way. Okay. Does it make sense to allow for the first time incarceration of that youth for throwing the bubblegum wrapper on the sidewalk without the findings being made?
Well, I mean, you know, if you're asking me to commit to that, you know, one way or the other, I mean, maybe.
I just want to know your opinion.
You know, maybe, maybe not. I mean, it would depend on the particular circumstance of the case, the particular juvenile. Yeah, you know, for a first time, maybe, you know, maybe that would be questionable.
If they throw two bubblegum wrappers on the sidewalk the second time.
No, I don't know.
Say the juvenile is protected because there is an abuse of discretion review if the trial court acts blatantly unreasonably, and you don't want to commit to what would be blatantly unreasonable, but
right.
you recognize it could be out there. But what is the standard by which a court of appeals is going to conduct that review? Is it really subjective, just this is ridiculous, or is there some standard that says the punishment is disproportionate to the crime?
Well, you know, I believe that in...
Is there something we can borrow from adult criminal law for a violation of probation can be so picky that the revocation is clearly an abuse of discretion?
I don't know if when it comes to adult criminal law if that would be the case because, you know, technically, you have, and I've seen district judges send people to the penitentiary for not doing their community service. You know, to some people that may be considered completely unreasonable. They've completed every other condition.
Is it reviewable by the appellate courts?
Excuse me, Your Honor?
Is the trial judge's revocation of probation, if it follows the letter of the law, is it reviewable by the appellate courts on an abuse of discretion standard or not?
I would believe that it is because of...
And this is something we don't know about. You can tell us we know, but we don't.
That's true. Good point.
Standard obtained.
In a criminal matter of this nature, it would also be abuse of discretion standard because you're basically, as in a modification hearing, when it comes to a motion to revoke probation, which, let's say for argument's sake, they are very similar in what you're doing. You have somebody that's had a previous disposition in a case. They've either been placed on probation, be it regular probation or deferred adjudication probation, or then they have done something to violate that probation. So they come back and they have a hearing on it. And the decision as to whether or not they violated that probation is based on a preponderance of the evidence standard, just like in a modification hearing. So, you know, granted that this is a juvenile case, and juvenile cases, you come out under the family code, you're dealing with criminal offenses, and so it's kind of quasi-criminal in nature. So in criminal cases where you're going on a preponderance of the evidence standard as to whether or not this person violated the offenses, yes, the Court of Appeals would review the trial court's decisions in the matter look at whether or not they abused their discretion in deciding beyond if this person violated it by a preponderance of the evidence.
Following up on Judge Brister's question, is the discretion come in setting the probation standards, or is it in determining whether there's a violation of those probation standards, or is it in the conclusion of what to do if they violated?
Well, I think...
Can there be an abuse of discretion in all of those?
I believe so, because those are all integral parts in making the decision. You know, when it comes to the evidence that's presented as to whether or not the person violated their probation, I mean, you have to have evidence presented, be it through them pleading true and agreeing to the allegations occurring, or bringing in witnesses to testify as to certain conditions that were violated. And so the judge has to make decisions as to whether certain evidence would be admissible, whether it would not be admissible, and then, you know, coupled with that and making his decision on the evidence that was presented to him.
What if there was a lot of evidence that was presented on you know, a great, you know, great weight of evidence presented on one side and very minimal evidence on the other, and the judge sides with the, you know, the side where there's very minimal evidence? I mean, you could, you would then look at that. I mean, based on his decision on that, it was his decision so overwhelmingly against the evidence that it was considered abuse of discretion. So I would say it's all integral. You could look at everything.
You were just mentioning a while ago, using as a parallel, adults and the juvenile proceeding.
Yes, Your Honor.
Could you tell me what the major difference is when you go and take a plea in a juvenile case and in a regular criminal case? The difference in what the judge or the adjudication?
Well, in the adjudication, that they're similar in certain respects, in the sense that just as in adult cases, the juvenile is admonished as to his constitutional rights.
But there's no order, final order is not a sentence, so to speak, in the juvenile matter. Is that correct?
No, well, he is, in the sense that there is an order of disposition, which spells out specifically what it is, which. You know, obviously in 5404, under certain circumstances during disposition, like we were talking about under 5404I, you can send them to TYC straight off if these certain things are met.
Okay, let me ask you one last thing. What is the, if we were taking a hypothetical here, what is the very youngest a child could receive this adjudication? What's the very youngest?
Well, you know, off the top of my head, I believe it's maybe around like 10 years old or something.
About 10
like
years
that.
Old? And what's the length that they could stay, the maximum length? So let's say they messed up on their last day on probation. What's the longest they can incarcerate them?
To incarcerate them to TYC?
Yeah, no. No, to
or
make
just
the
place them on probation.
To be in this purgatory we're talking about.
Well, they can be placed on probation until their 18th birthday.
Okay, so if a person went from 10, let's just say 11 to 18, don't you think there might be an issue about changing conditions? It might be an issue about what's in the best interest of the child?
Oh, definitely. You know, and in this particular case, the statute, you know, the statute 5405 does not specifically require that those conditions be specifically enumerated in the order. But as one of the other judges pointed out concerning this particular case and the judge reaching his decision, I think it was quite clear that those considerations were taken into account in reviewing the past history of the child, his home history, his parents, any other alternatives to residing with his mother, and the judge, clearly took all of this into account, and it was a difficult decision for him to make. But there were numerous instances as to things occurring, and there was a serious question as to not just the child's well-being and safety, but the safety of the public in addition. And that's another one of the underlying purposes of Title III, is safety to the public.
Well, in other words, you think the legislature probably thinks that it doesn't matter if a person could say they're 7 years and there'd be no change in what's in the best interest of the child. You don't think that they would have taken that into account?
Well, I think that they, because they didn't include it in 5405, I think they took into account, well, those problems are addressed during the disposition phase, the actual adjudication and disposition phase, okay? And it's not to say, and that's not implying that, therefore, those things aren't even considered in them making their determinations under 5405 and their modification. It's just something that's not by statute legally required of them to include in their order in reaching the decision to commitment in the Texas Youth Commission.
So your argument is just strictly plain language. You don't have any policy problem with the judge making those findings. You don't see anything wrong with it and actually think it could be a good idea. The legislature just hadn't required it and we shouldn't create it.
Well, what I am asserting is I feel like if there were any changes to be made, then the legislature should be the ones to address it. I mean, reviewing the cases that have come down concerning these types of situations, these aren't cases really where the cases that are cited by our brief in support of 5405 and the lack of the requirement of 5404I's assertions in being placed in the order. The fact situations are pretty similar in connections with this our situation. This isn't a situation where this is the first time that they've been brought forward for like a modification hearing or something of that nature. There have been repeated violations of the juvenile's probation, and so we're not talking about a situation where the person is being sent to TYC for violating the court-ordered rule of, say, not littering or something of that nature. Okay, yes, there are some pitfalls there may be when it comes to certain fact scenarios, as is I think the case when you're dealing with almost any statute. And I feel like if that were to become a significant problem, if there was evidence that you did have, say, kids that were placed on a juvenile probation and in their first, they'd never had a modification to their probation before, and the only violation of their probation they committed was the littering, then maybe that would need to be addressed if it appeared to be a widespread problem. But as of this point, we haven't, no fact scenario of that case has even come up before the Court of Criminal Appeals.
Mr. Bullock, is it accurate that under 5404, a child can never be taken from their home without the findings being made?
Under the disposition hearing, and under 5404, if they've been adjudicated and it's disposition based on that adjudication, if they're to be sent by to TYC, yes, those specifics under 5404I have to be incorporated in that order for their first time.
Is it possible under 5405 for a child to be sent to TYC without those findings having ever been made?
Well, I would say so. Yeah, because they could be placed on probation, and you're not required to have those findings in the order because they're being placed on probation. Right. The only time you have to send them to TYC is because of that.
Let me rephrase the question. Is it possible for the child to be removed from the home under 54.05 without the findings having been made? Because in this case, the child agreed to probation outside of the home
right
before the 54.05 issue came up. So let's put that to the side.
Right.
So is it possible under 54.05 for a child to be removed from the home without the findings under 54.04, the ABC findings we're talking about, being made?
I think under certain circumstances it would be possible.
And you think the legislature intended that?
Did they intend that? I do believe that they took it into consideration in writing the laws, because it's such a distinct difference between the two sections. I mean, one section you're having a...
I'm not sure I understand. I asked, did the legislature intend that difference between the two, and you said you believe the legislature took that into consideration. So you think the legislature intended the different treatment under the two different provisions or not?
I think so, at least at this point. It's just because that is such a difference distinguishing the two statutes, okay? And you obviously you have the first statute, 5404. That's the first phase in all this, and there's always the possibility that the juvenile may be modified and sent to TYC. And so I think the legislature took that into account, and they intended at this point in time that, look, these problems, that the child is being affected his due process rights in the disposition and adjudication hearing, and once he's been the case has been adjudicated and there has been disposition, when it comes to modification, his due process rights are a little more limited.
Any other questions?
Quick question, Chief. On this April 22nd order, was this a proposed order that was presented by the county? Or was it drafted by the court without assistance of the party?
Your Honor, I think the policy in our county normally is that the state prepares the orders and submits them to the court for their signature.
And this would have been served on the opposing attorney?
Yes, before prior to signature, we always confer with opposing counsel. Let him review the motion and the order to see if they have any problems or objections to any of the wording or anything of that nature prior to submitting it to the judge for.
And there was no objection that this failed to include the finding that they're complaining about on appeal?
I was not the actual trial court prosecutor, but it does appear from the record that there was not an objection.
Thank you.
Thank you, counsel.
Thank you.
May it please the court. I do want to clear up a few things. Children become subject to the juvenile code at age 10. They get sentenced to TYC, that is a non-modifiable order. Trial court cannot modify that order. They can be there until their 18th birthday sometimes under certain circumstances. They can be kept there until their 21st birthday. In this particular case, we dealt with a child who first went on probation at, I believe, age 10, or maybe closer to his lower birthday.
Can they be released early if they do well at TYC?
Absolutely. This particular child was on probation in a residential facility for an anger management problem. His father died. A 10-year-old boy's father died.
Well,
suddenly he became unmanageable.
Let me ask you this. You've not launched a constitutional challenge against 5405. That's my understanding.
We're dealing with, we're arguing from statutory construction.
It's just pure statutory construction.
Yes, sir.
And so you just have to look at the words the legislature used and make that determination.
That's my opinion. Also.
So really, fair, not fair, doesn't come into it.
That's what we were talking about earlier when I said certain jobs are y'all, certain jobs are the Court of Appeals. But I did want y'all to know that if we can get these standards in place and go back to the Court of Appeals, we're going to get this thing back in the trial court. Because this judge ignored the fact that the little boy's father died, which is kind of a watershed event in one's life, and his grandparents were for money and provide a home for him. How could a judge ignore this? That's why we're here. A judge, who by the way was never actually elected as a judge, made this decision, and we think it's an abuse of discretion. We think it's in violation of the attenuous statute. And so,
with regard to relief about the failure to make the finding, do you want a new trial or do you want the judge to review the evidence and issue a new order if you get back to the trial court?
I present the same evidence I did the first time.
So there's no need for a new trial. You just want the judge to make written findings to assist your appeal?
I'd like to bring my witnesses in, yes, sir. I mean, the judge would need to talk to the grandfather to see if he was still able to care for the child, obviously.
Okay, update your facts.
Your Honor, the state...
You've not brought a legal sufficiency challenge, only factual sufficiency, is that right?
Yes, Your Honor, they didn't meet the factual sufficiency under what I want the criteria to be.
But you've not claimed legal insufficiency.
Correct, Your Honor. The state's argument about A, B, and C shouldn't be in modification hearings is based upon the principle of expressio unis exclusio alteris. Your Honor, may I have 60 more seconds?
This is my initial question.
A few more seconds.
Your Honors, I've looked through the case law. The rules of construction, this rule does not apply to this kind of case. It deals with where we're doing enumerations. In a contract, in a statute, and under a class of care provider, we're listing osteopaths, MDs, and licensed physical therapists, for example. And a chiropractor wants onto the list, but he's not a licensed physical therapist, he's excluded. That's the rule that they're using. That doesn't apply here.
Thanks.
5405 is... the basic integral statutes.
You have a question. Thank you, counsel. The court will take another brief recess. All right.